Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The human trafficking spotlight fell on Toledo 7 years ago when a federal sting in Pennsylvania broke up a sex trafficking operation involving 177 females, 77 of whom, including a 10-year-old, were from the Toledo area. That effort inspired then-Democratic State Senator Teresa Fedor, who ever since has pushed legislation to combat human trafficking in Ohio. She might call it a crusade. Her efforts paid off last week when Governor Kasich signed now State Representative Fedor's human trafficking legislation into law. Teresa Fedor of Toledo is with us today to talk about the bill and what is left to do. Welcome to the show, Representative Fedor.
Thank you, Ann. It's great to be here and continue to educate and advocate to combat this crime.
The way I put that there, I think I said then Democratic. You're still a Democrat.
I am still
in the Ohio
Democrat,
House,
yes.
Right? Along with us is Teresa Flores, a human trafficking survivor who shared her story in her book, The Slave Across the Street. She also founded the organization SOAP, which stands for Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. Governor Kasich awarded Teresa Flores the Courage Award for her work in human trafficking earlier this year. Welcome to the show, Teresa Flores.
Well, thank you so much.
If you have a question or comment for our guests about the issue of human trafficking, and we're going to kind of talk a little bit conceptually about that and the semantics behind it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So let's just talk a little bit about the idea of what is human trafficking. It sounds sort of antiseptic, kind of desensitizing, human trafficking, like drugs. Representative, what is it?
Well, it's human trafficking is modern day slavery. And right there, you have to stop and pause and think slavery. You know, wait a minute, that's not something that we're familiar with, modern day slavery. And what does it look like? It's labor or sex trafficking, you know, exploitation, people who want to sell or buy labor or sex from our children or vulnerable people, and the whole operation works around vulnerability, and us in our society not knowing the cues and the clues and having the laws to strengthen anyone who would want to exploit people who are vulnerable, have strong enough laws to really end it. So, you know, it's been a process over 7 years and pretty much a crusade for me, and totally committed to eradicating this, because the more I thought about it, the more I thought about all the other problems we have in society. But if we can't pay attention to this and correct this, then we're just spinning our wheels everywhere.
How do we measure the incidence of it? How do we know how many people are involved in it? How many people are victimized by it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done the research through the TIPS Commission, which is now the Human Trafficking Commission under A.G. DeWine. We've been able to quantify the numbers. It's over 1,000 children who are victimized every year, and we believe that's a conservative number, and over 3,000 children at risk. And also, there are folks who are at risk for labor trafficking. So we don't think we have exact numbers, but as we've educated and advocated across the board for professionals, including judges, law enforcement, social services, teachers, when they learn what human trafficking is, modern day slavery, they realize they have probably seen victims for years and years and years. However, now we're defining it so that we know what it looks like. Young people will know what it looks like and know how to get out of it, and we'll be able to respond appropriately. You know, we always think that prostitution is the oldest
profession.
Profession, exactly. People can answer that. But I say it's the oldest oppression of women in the world. And women are entrapped into this either out of need or force, mostly force.
It starts with that.
It starts with that. Or they're vulnerable, and they get entrapped very easily. And you're going to hear Teresa's story. But we've heard over and over and over very courageous survivors come forward and tell their story. We need to listen to them, because that's how we're going to break this operation down and put the real criminals behind jail.
You're listening to State Representative Teresa Fedor. She is from the Toledo area, and she's the author of the legislation that the governor signed last week to address human trafficking in the state of Ohio.
He's signing it next week. Yes.
It passed last week.
Yes.
Sorry about that. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
He's signing it next week in Toledo. It did pass both houses unanimously.
Yes, correct.
Also with us, Teresa Flores. She's founder of Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. It's SOAP. Mm-hmm. And Teresa, your story, State Representative Fetter referred to it briefly, but it starts in Michigan, in a wealthy suburb in Michigan, Birmingham, Michigan. Tell us a little bit about that.
Like you said, I came from a really wonderful family, very well off, and but I moved around a lot, so I didn't have grandparents or aunts and uncles or any kind of support system around me. And just really simple, a boy kind of started paying a lot of attention to me. Spent about 6 months, I can see now, grooming me, and did something that detectives have told us is a very common technique that traffickers even use today, you know, 30 years later, where he just was always very nice and to give me compliments, invited me for a ride, was going to take me home, but then didn't. Took me to his house and said, you know, I like you, you're very pretty. Offered me a beverage, a pop, and it was drugged, and then proceeded to rape me. And then they had other people there at the time taking pictures and used that then to blackmail me into service for 2 years to pay back that debt. And this is a really common technique that traffickers use on girls.
Now, this was a kid in high school.
Mm-hmm. An older kid, yeah.
So he was part of a larger group.
Correct.
That taught
yeah.
him how to do this.
Yes, exactly.
And 2 years later, you escaped somehow.
Right.
How did that work?
The police had been involved by this time. They had actually kidnapped me and left me for dead in a motel in the inner city Detroit. And so the police were watching more closely, and my dad was able to get a transfer for out of state many, many miles away. And we were basically able to escape without them knowing.
That time, the night that they abandoned you mm-hmm. in that hotel in inner city Detroit, that was a night that you look back at and,
yeah.
and it has inspired literally what you do today with SOAP.
Yeah, it was my worst moment of my entire life. It's one of those that we all have as survivors, that worst moment that you'll never forget. But I wanted to be able to use that to be able to rescue other girls from their worst moment.
And that moment, before they abandoned you, there was repeated rapes by several different men. They left you in the hotel, and you went in. The one thing you could do was go to the bathroom.
Right. They spent all night off auctioning me off continually all night long until I literally passed out. And when I woke up, I ran to the bathroom to wash up. So.
And you remember going back to the SOAP.
Yeah, that's the one place that victims have told us over and over again is the only place they're allowed to be by themselves. And they all wash up after each man.
So the SOAP, Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution, how do you incorporate that then now in your crusade today?
I'm looking really strongly at the demand side of this. We know that these girls are being lured into it, tricked into it, you know, not just kidnapped, but being told all the wonderful things they want to hear, and then the terms of the deal change. And he forces them into doing this. They put them for sale up on Backpage.com, which is similar to Craigslist. They put their pictures up there and advertise them in different parts of the town and say, oh, we're going to be at this hotel or that hotel. And then men make a phone call and make the arrangement to come. So we put the SOAPs in these bathrooms of these motels with the National Human Trafficking Hotline number on it in hopes that the girls will see it and make a phone call in their worst moment.
Representative Fetter, one of the big components of your bill was it does target the demand this time instead of the traditional or what is considered the traditional perpetrator of it, the prostitute. Now it sees the prostitute as a victim and the John or the demand side as the problem.
Right. Well, the approach to combat human trafficking is to have a three-prong approach. It's all victim-centered. So that's number one, which has taken me 7 years to get across to my colleagues in the State House because they often don't see prostitutes as victims. So that's a whole culture and a sea change in which we are now changing and have. This bill will go a long way to helping people understand it because we're going to be able to prosecute those who are the real criminals in this crime. I mean, it runs like a market system. If there's no demand, we don't have need for a product. And so my goal all along has not only been increased penalties for the traffickers, which we did. It was a first degree misdemeanor for traffickers. Now it's a serious felony, and they have to register as sex offenders. That's huge.
It follows them through the rest of their life.
A huge risk factor. The risk is very high now. And on the demand end, there's a huge risk factor for Johns. And in some cases, they're going to have to register as sex offenders. So we're getting this right. The average age for a victim is 13 years old. Talk about vulnerable. Anyone who's 13 is going through a rough patch in their life and learning how the world works as an adult. And these predators are certainly taking us down the road of destroying families, lives, communities, and we're really going to go after the Johns and help them understand how they're destroying communities and families and lives, marriages. You know, this is totally out of control. So we've got a very strong bill. There are other components that work together in concert to really clean this up quickly. And if you want, I can talk about those.
I wanted to talk just briefly about the Johns. I was listening to a BBC report. It was about the international human trafficking problem, and they spent some time in New York City at a program there that is focused on once the Johns are arrested, and the first layer of penalties they deal with is they have to go to a class that teaches them about that. And they interviewed one of the guys in this class, and he said he really didn't get it, what was going on. Now, not all of them are like that. Some of them are predators. They know exactly who it is that they're raping, but a lot of them don't, just like the rest of the world doesn't really understand it.
They don't understand that women are objectified here. I mean, I believe in our society we are anyways with advertisements and so forth. So now we're desensitized to women as human beings. And certainly in the modern day slavery, sex slavery, it's really just overlooked because of the attitude. So we need to help all of our society, especially the men, understand, and young men who are 13 years old. And all the way through college, I mean, there are still pimp and hoe parties across this nation raising money for nonprofits. I mean, we really need to get a hold of what we're doing and why we're doing it, and really understand that objectifying women is wrong, that we need to respect them, that they all have mothers, sisters, they're going to have daughters, wives, daughters, granddaughters, and that we need to really stop and think about what we're doing here, and that it is slavery. So the penalty needs to really be very high, in my opinion, so that they can get a hold of themselves and understand what are they doing to society, and how is this continuing?
And how are they contributing to it?
How they're contributing. And that some of them are really affected by that. So we really need to have the churches, nonprofits, talk to 13-year-olds about sex, which is a problem in Ohio. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very hard subject. But if we don't, we are not preventing or protecting trafficking from happening and continuing to happen generation after generation. So my goal here in this bill is to quickly eradicate it, help us understand how we can restore and integrate the survivors back into society. And there are great components in this bill that will help victims come forward, survivors get the justice that they need, and for us to get that information to go after those traffickers who are continuing to traffic our children. I mean, the adult survivors, victims, know that their pimp is still operating with a new 13-year-old. So I'm going to make sure we clean that up.
More than 1,000 minors are trafficked annually in Ohio. 13-year-olds are the most commonly trafficked. Instead of prosecuting these minors for prostitution, Teresa Fetter's bill, it's going to be signed into law next week, provides treatment services and alternative options and targets the Johns. We'll be right back and continue the conversation after this. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we'll go deep inside Mexico's multi-billion-dollar cocaine trade and the American market that drives it. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon from 1 until 2 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. 82 degrees in downtown Columbus with sunshine. Sunny skies today, warming up to a high of 92. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 68 degrees. Another warm day on Wednesday, sunshine and a high of 92. Clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 71. And again on Thursday, sunshine and a high in the 90s. This is 89.7 NPR News, and All Sides continues.
We're talking about a new law. It'll be signed into law next week when Governor Kasich travels to Toledo. The author of the law, State Representative Teresa Fetter, from the Toledo area, is with us. Representative Fetter, thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm. Also with us, Teresa Flores, founder of Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. Teresa, thanks again.
Thank you.
The law would address human trafficking in the state of Ohio, and I was wondering, to what extent can you isolate something in a state-by-state basis, Representative Fetter?
Mm-hmm. Well, this started in 2000 with the federal government encouraging all the states to have a standalone felony for human trafficking. We finally did that in the last General Assembly of a second-degree felony. With this law, it's a first-degree felony. And here's what's really great about the Ohio law, which, in my opinion, this is a model for the nation in eradicating it quickly. We are matching the first-degree felony now, matches the federal level, and the maximum sentence prison term will be up to 15 years, which is the highest first-degree felony sentencing in Ohio. So we're saying that this is worse than murder. Slavery, modern-day slavery, sex slavery, labor slavery is the worst crime in the state of Ohio. If we tolerate this, we'll tolerate anything. So it's zero tolerance. And then there's obstruction of justice to match the federal level. So if anyone is threatening the witness, you're going to be slapped with obstruction of justice. Any part of the criminal operation. It's just a huge hammer on the trafficking end and on the John end. And for the victim and survivor, we have elements of encouraging our adult survivors to get their records expunged. Now, that is something I never thought I would be able to
do.
Very
liberating.
Very. And so what you're able to do then is provide the justice that's there, gather the stories, go after the traffickers that are likely still operating, mm-hmm. which we can go do and put them in jail. And the other great aspect of this is that there's a civil remedy with punitive and compensatory damages. So that all goes into a database. We also need our legal professionals to come forward and help with those civil remedies. We also have taken all the assets from the traffickers, even their jewelry. They no longer can take their jewelry out of jail and go, get the bail money and get a lawyer. Everything is going into victim services. So there's a victim services fund. But also for, justice. I call this bill the Independence Day for victims and survivors. And it's okay for them to come forward because we have appropriate response to protect them and prevent this from happening, and provide the justice that they deserve.
It's been 7 years, but are you glad it took 7 years? Is this a better bill now than it would have been had it passed when you introduced it 7 years ago, whatever form
it
was in?
Well, let's just say there have been a number of bills introduced since 2005. Mm-hmm. My good friend, Senator David Goodman, introduced
from Columbus,
kind of a comprehensive mm-hmm. bill. I did
well,
the bill.
Well, he's now, of course. Yes. Commerce Director.
Yes, yeah. Which he's helped, with the language mm-hmm. and has been very, very supportive. And he and I were partners on the Senate side. And then I introduced a bill just requiring law enforcement to get the training and to identify. So I thought, well, if they can't do a comprehensive one, let's do a piecemeal. And then Representative Chandler did a more comprehensive bill like Senator Goodman. So that's where we got started. Mm-hmm. And really, it was incredible to hear the attitudes. And my colleagues tell me it's just a Toledo problem. You guys have a lot of work to do. No, 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 no. You have it here, too. So we started gathering the cases. And we have an FBI task force in Toledo that's really helped hone in and train a lot of the law enforcement in Ohio. In fact, they train around the nation. They're that good. We have a list of over 100 pimps in Toledo. So the minute he signs that bill, we are going to work in concert to clean this up. But there have been a lot of great people, the FBI Task Force, Teresa Flores, the TIPS Commission, a number of people that really advocated and educated everyone to get us here today. But we have an incredible bill today.
Teresa Flores, how long was it before you got any treatment for your struggles and for the trauma you underwent? It was years, wasn't it?
Yeah, I when I went to college, I attempted to get counseling. Things just got out of control with the post-traumatic stress, and things I just couldn't handle it anymore. And so I went to like a local rape crisis center and started to share my story, and they just looked at me like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I walked out of there. A couple years went by, you know, attempted again to get help, and people just, you know, crying and, you know, just absolutely having no clue. And so at that moment, I decided I was just going to be on my own. And so I went many years just kind of doing the old self-help and, you know, different kinds of a personal, you know, journey working through it. And then when I finally sat in a conference in 2006 with Representative Chandler, and I learned that, you know, I finally had my word for what to call what happened to me. And I meet so many other survivors. That's why I think that that 1,000 kids that this is happening to is really just the tip of the iceberg, because I meet so many other women that say, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was called that. I had something so similar happen, but just a little different. And so I think there's so many of us out there that just didn't know it was called this.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Dan Fisher Facebook page. If you're just joining us, we're talking about House Bill 262. It's aimed at punishing those who force anyone into the sex trade, enslave anybody for any reason. If you have a question or comment about that, 614-292-8513. It's also aimed at helping people who have been victimized by the slave trade, the modern slave trade in Ohio, and anyone. Is there any recognition that some people are being brought in from out of state? Does the bill address that, or is it just the same?
It addresses it comprehensively.
Okay.
So we'll be working with the federal government no matter what the situation is. We're going to be able to provide help, and the task force that Governor put together, and we're expecting the report to be out next week, will really close the gap in services, because they're really addressing victims now, survivors now, and how are we doing it? Can we do a better job? Can we pull down federal monies, you know, comb through our bureaucracies and see what we can do to address an appropriate response for victims? And that's a very heavy task. So I think comprehensively, the state of Ohio will be a model in how we're really going to make this a priority and clean this up. And I don't know if you know that in the United States, we're number one in the world for trading child pornography. Here's the kicker. Ohio is fifth in the nation trading child pornography. We're ninth in the nation for child abuse. We're not giving the appropriate trauma treatment for children in those circumstances, and they're vulnerable, and that's a huge risk pool for the 1,000 victims or more. And that's where the traffickers are coming. So we need to really take a look at all the services of trauma treatment, child abuse, the health and well-being of our children. Really look at that. I mean, why are we trying to solve all these education issues when I taught 18 years?
So you're not knocking education?
Not at all. Well, what I'm saying is you don't know who's going to come through the door. Or you have a child that's okay one day and all of a sudden they're not. Their lives have fallen apart. Something's going on. You know, we're on the front line to call children's services if there's any kind of circumstance. But we're not truly, I don't think we're doing a good job.
We're not treating it as child abuse. And it is. Human trafficking or teen prostitution, which there's no such thing, is a form of child abuse. And that's how we need to start seeing it.
And this bill aims directly at that. Even if you're not pimp controlled, you're under 18 and you're in prostitution or solicitation, you're going to get a diversion program. So we're saying that, you know, if you're under 18, you don't have a right to sell yourself or be under PIM control. You're going to be seen as a victim and receive the type of trauma treatment. We need a lot of people mm-hmm. coming forward and helping being a part of the solution, and that is with therapeutic foster homes. Yeah. I mean, you just can't put them into a home that looks like, a happy family right. because they have a lot of trauma. Yeah. And we need to be very sensitive in how we're reintegrating them back into mm-hmm. society.
I have an email from Angel. She writes, I'm so glad to hear about this law because the women are often the only ones shown on TV after arrests. The Johns mm-hmm. are almost never shown. It's sad because it's hard to reintegrate into a regular life after the women are shamed on the news.
Well, what we're saying is that we're no longer going to put that stigma and shame on them. As I'm saying, come forward. You're going to get your records expunged if you're an adult victim, a minor victim. You have a civil remedy, which you can go after the trafficker and sue them with punitive and compensatory damages. You're going to get just a lot of help and services. So we're going to take another bite at this apple. There are some things that I want to do to make sure that we have the correct thought process in the penalties, where age of consent is used for penalties. And I'm drumming it through my colleague's head. These children are not consenting. So you cannot apply an age of consent penalty system through human trafficking laws.
Like they
laws.
Do say when kids decide which parent they want to go. What do you mean by age of consent?
Under age of consent is 16 in the state of Ohio.
Okay.
But if you're a trafficking victim, you're a victim. A rape is a rape is a rape. You're not consenting to be raped and be sold and be a modern day in slavery. So I still have some educating to do and go back and correct that. I mean, the model legislation should be anyone under 18 should be protected, mm-hmm. and anyone who's caught trafficking or, buying sex from a minor under 18, the same penalty will apply.
Corey in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you. I know a week or two ago, the Attorney General cracked down on massage parlors in Warren, Ohio, that were fronts for prostitution. In Ohio, we license massage therapists, but not all massage therapists need to be licensed. Would requiring massage therapists all to be licensed or facilities to only hire licensed massage therapists be a way of cracking down on some of these fronts for prostitution?
I do believe so. That's another bite at the apple that I'm talking about. You know, we need to not accept what we know is going on in those special massage parlors. And, we know that there are victims in there. That's just an area where we're allowing this to happen. So, yeah, we can use rules and regulations in government and really crack down on that.
Representative Fetter, I'm a former Toledoan. You're doing an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Corey. Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi. Thanks. Very interesting show, and I think an important subject. I have a question, not a comment so much.
Okay.
The implication, and I'm not talking about a 13-year-old. I mean, most adult males could tell that a young woman is too young. But under the law, I'm just like, this is hypothetical. I don't have anything to do with this, and I think the legislation is laudable. Just that the question is, okay, so if a fellow, goes to a social event or what have you and is, solicited actively by a woman, let's say, of a seemingly appropriate age and, ends up engaging in something a prostitute kind of situation, what are the implications for the, and we're talking now mostly about males.
You mean, what is he going to be charged with?
What's he going to be charged
with? He's busted.
And what are the implications? Okay. I mean, I'm not taking a side on this.
Now, Paul, we don't think that you're a John, so
no,
believe
me, I'm not.
Let's just spit it out. But you're curious. Is there any distinction then between if the victim/prostitute, right. the person in that role, is, does the age make a difference in terms of what the John would be charged with if he's arrested as well?
That law has not changed.
Okay.
So we're dealing with anyone under 18. But here's the premise that I really had heart-to-heart talks with my colleagues. When you're in that type of situation, both, and they're both adults, you know, one is choosing to break the law. They're already making that choice. They're already taking the risk that they've decided they're going to break the law. Then they're taking the risk they're not going to get caught. And you know, for John, it's the same thing.
Right.
When you say yes, you're choosing to break the law and you're taking the risk that you're not going to get caught. So a crime is a crime. You know, I fashioned this law to really be strict for anyone under 18, but it will help people pause, especially the Johns who don't want to get caught when someone says, hey, I'm over 18, but they're really 16 or they're really 17. You don't want to be in this situation in Ohio because the penalties will be severe.
And it is against the law to purchase or sell sex. Mm-hmm. Equal offense, you know, until we get the sign. But so, unfortunately, we just go after the person selling it, not the person buying it. And so that's what people just don't even realize is that you can't buy a prostitute. You can't buy a you know.
Well, let's talk about, and Paul, thanks for your call, because we only have a few more minutes left. I want to thank you for calling. It's great
thank
to make
you.
This kind of distinctions.
Thank you.
All right, so. I was talking earlier about the program in New York City where mm-hmm. they're trying to educate Johns. It's part of the mm-hmm. penalty process for them. But there are places like that in Ohio at work right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Teresa Flores?
Yeah, they're called John Schools, and we have them in Dayton and Toledo and Columbus. Mm-hmm. Some are held regularly, some are not. But and they're wonderful. I believe firmly in them as a way to re-educate men on this. They go through a whole day class, and they are talked to by the prosecuting attorneys of, well, you thought she was 18, but guess what? She wasn't. So now things change. The health department to tell you about what lovely diseases you could have just gotten. People in the community where they've had a huge problem with drugs and prostitution and what it's done to their community.
In their neighborhoods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By a man who's a sex addict and what this has done to destroy his life. And then they ended up with a survivor. And I have spoken at many of these. And we tell these men, you know, you think that we were there by choice, but we weren't. And this is what led to in our lives to this moment. And we do it in hopes that they will walk out of there and say, wow, I didn't know this. I'm not going to do this again. So it's something that we need to have regularly. But the problem is that we need to have reverse stings in our state, meaning we need to go after the guys and arrest them in order to have the John Schools and then have that be a
because there are
endeavor.
Stings for the mm-hmm. prostitutes,
correct.
But not for the Johns.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's about all we have time for today. Scratch the surface.
Mm-hmm.
More to talk about, and I hope you'll come back mm-hmm. and join us and do that.
Definitely.
I'd love
Thank
to.
You.
It's Teresa, State Representative Teresa Fetter from the Toledo area, and also Teresa Flores, founder of Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. We'll have a link to that website if you want to learn more about SOAP. And more about what they're doing. So when we return,
thanks, you too.
We're going to talk with the folks from the Mid-Ohio Food Bank about an effort they have underway to raise some money to feed the people of Central Ohio. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
The appearance of the ads shows Central Ohio is changing from a heavily regulated electricity market to a more competitive one.
First Energy Solutions and other suppliers want an unfair advantage.
AEP's scheme will hurt our economy.
Thanks to the new law, AEP must sell some of its electricity to other power companies.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and it's Tech Tuesday. Today we'll discuss social media and politics, recent announcements by Apple and Microsoft, and the latest in cell phones. Stay with us for Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And Wednesday night, be sure to watch WOSU-TV when NOVA follows the development of the telescope over several centuries and examines the use of the telescope to help us understand the Milky Way. Watch NOVA, Hunting the Edge of Space. It's Wednesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV. 82 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine warming up to a high of 92 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 68. More sunshine and a high back up to 92 on Wednesday. Clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 71. And we'll see highs again in the 90s with sunshine on Thursday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The Mid-Ohio Food Bank serves more than 550 pantries, shelters, soup kitchens, and other organizations, providing the resources for as many as 76,000 meals a day. One of the ways they pay for that is the annual Food Fight, a collaboration with the Central Ohio Restaurant Association. Joining us now to talk about the campaign is Marilyn Tomasi. She's Vice President of Marketing and Communications for the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Welcome to the show, Marilyn.
Good morning.
Another Toledo person,
indeed.
Might add.
Indeed.
Also joining us is Margaret Standing. She's Communications Director for Bob Evans Restaurants. Bob Evans Restaurants have been supporters of the Food Fight since 2009. Welcome, Margaret.
Good morning.
According to the Feeding America Network, 17.3% of Franklin County residents don't know where their next meal will come from. And Food Fight takes place tomorrow to help them answer that question across the city. Tell us about Food Fight, what it does, and can we actually throw food at each other?
No throwing food. But what we do want to encourage you to do is we want to encourage folks in Franklin County to eat out early and often tomorrow on Wednesday, June 20th. We have about 60 restaurants with 170 locations participating in Food Fight. Go out for breakfast, go out for snacks, for lunch, for dinner, for cocktails, for just about every meal you can have, because the restaurants who are participating in Food Fight this year will donate 5% of their sales that day to Mid-Ohio Food Bank and our Operation Feed community-wide drive.
How much money does this raise? How successful has it been in the past?
Well, we raised about 51,000 meals last year, and we hope to double it, more than double it, to over 100,000 meals this year for the one-day event.
Now, when you go into the restaurant, if somebody, if we go into Bob Evans, do you have to say, I'm here for the Food Fight?
You don't. You certainly can, but you don't need to. Anyone who dines in a participating restaurant, including 35 Columbus area, Central Ohio area, Bob Evans, will just donate 5% of whatever the sales are tomorrow.
And what did that cost Bob Evans last year? Do you know?
Last year, we raised about $9,000 for the Food Fight. So this year, as you say, Marilyn, we're looking forward to really growing that next year, tomorrow.
Why is it important to do it this way? Why not just have Bob Evans just pitch in $9,000, Margaret?
Well, and we do that, too. We make a corporate gift, and we are also, our employees at our corporate headquarters are also participating in fundraising with Operation Feed. This is just one more way we can help, and it also gets our guests and our customers involved.
Yeah, why? What's the value of that, Marilyn Tomasi? I mean, that people do it that way. Why not just give money?
Well, I think it helps to educate folks in our community about hunger. You know, the face of hunger has really changed over the past few years, and it is our neighbors, our family, our coworkers, our colleagues that we're seeing. They don't know necessarily where their next meal is coming from. So I think engaging people in the fight against hunger helps to raise awareness that, yeah, we do have a hunger problem in our community.
Is it Bob Evans, Margaret, that has lowered their prices on some of their meals, or has a different kind of menu that's a little bit more?
We've got some great value offerings
feasible,
right
yeah.
now. Of course, you know, restaurateurs in a challenging economic environment, value is a great message to be sharing, because people are looking for a great value. And you know, I think as Marilyn was saying, it's a nice opportunity if you're going to be able to join us tomorrow, at Bob Evans, for breakfast. As you're having that meal, a good square meal, it's kind of a nice moment to think about those who aren't able to do that. and then, you know, support the hungry in Central Ohio by participating at a restaurant tomorrow.
The Mid-Ohio Food Bank serves 20 counties, Marilyn Tomasi. How does Franklin County compare to other areas in the state? How are we doing?
Well, we serve about 550 charities within those 20 counties, meaning food pantries, soup kitchens, after-school sites, senior centers, and half of those are in Franklin County alone. And we know that since 2006, hunger has increased about 40%. So with the economy and the recession continuing to linger, unemployment what it is, we don't expect that to change anytime soon. So Franklin County is a significant issue right here in our own backyard.
There's a food fight this week. It's taking place tomorrow across the city. Participating restaurants will donate 5% of each check to Operation Feed. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Marilyn Tomasi of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank and also Margaret Standing of Bob Evans Restaurants, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If there are other restaurant owners out there who are participating, give us a call and tell us what you're doing. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Where are the most active pantries and soup kitchens located in the area? What are we looking at? Is it mostly Center City, or are there growing operations in the outskirts?
Well, interesting enough, over the past couple of years, hunger in the suburbs has exploded. So there are food pantries opening up in communities like New Albany and Worthington and Dublin and Hilliard and other suburbs. But most certainly, we have the majority of our pantries, certainly they're all over Franklin County, but many of them in central, the inner city.
And in Franklin County, 38% of food pantry requests come from children under the age of 17. I was surprised at that.
Yeah. One thing that we're seeing more and more, that households are continuing to get larger and larger. And we know that at least one in four children in Ohio, over 25% of those children, are considered food insecure. And one in six Ohioans today are going hungry. So we have a significant issue. Mid-Ohio Food Bank works every day with its partner network to try to get as much food as we can to those who need it.
I think some people sometimes have a hard time imagining why anyone would be going hungry these days. There are all of these soup kitchens and there's all of these pantries out there. Why is anybody who goes hungry? Is it just somebody who sits at home and isn't availing themselves of what's out there?
No, the folks that are seeking help at the food pantries, more than 40% of those folks work. These are folks who are trying to do the right thing, are trying to take care of their families, but they may or may not be eligible for food stamps. They may be working at a job where they're not getting a living wage. They may be working at a job where they're not getting enough hours, that they have to make decisions between paying rent and buying medicine, buying food, or buying clothes for the children. So they are making tough decisions. You know, last year alone, Mid-Ohio Food Bank distributed 40 million pounds of food, and we're still falling short, which is why we have programs like Operation Feed, why we have such great partners like Bob Evans Restaurants, who are helping to raise the bar to get more food to more people who are hungry in our community. But these are people who are trying to do the right thing. They're just trying to take care of their family.
I know a lot of the grocery stores, the supermarkets, that sort of thing, have become a lot more efficient for good reason, because it's in their best interest to become more efficient with what they do with their leftovers and their food. And that's affected the bottom line in terms of the amount of food you get from those operations. Is the same thing going on with restaurants, Margaret, standing at Bob Evans? And have you found yourself sort of at cross purposes there, where you might have used to give away food, but now you're trying to become more efficient?
Well, actually, about a year ago, we launched a new program. We call it our Harvest Program, where unused food at the restaurant, let's say the restaurant has overprepared and has some surplus for the day, through our Harvest Program, we're donating that portion of food to directly to an agency, so a soup kitchen, a shelter. So we're kind of coming at it from both ways to meet the need. You know, we're supporting it from the corporate side, but, you know, with dollars and with food donations that way. But then we're also supporting the agencies directly with actual food that they're able to, you know, reheat and prepare and serve. So, you know, you just need to keep changing your strategy as you know, business changes and the need changes. So we're trying to think through all the different angles and all the different aspects to meet the need.
We have an email from Sarah. She writes, "Thank you for having this show and thanks to the restaurants for helping out the food bank. I'm a volunteer in the summer, and I think people remember to make food monetary donations around the holidays. But in the summer, people need help, too. People sometimes need help even more so because kids are home in the summer and not getting a school lunch." That's a big issue, isn't it, Marilyn?
It's huge. We are working with the City of Columbus and other organizations like the State Association of Food Banks and Children's Hunger Alliance and others to try to get kids fed this summer at many of the rec centers. But when a child is not getting enough to eat, that clearly affects their learning. It affects their ability to succeed in school. So we at the food bank also have a backpack program where kids on Friday who may not have food at home are able to take a supply of good, solid staple food home for the weekend. But in the summer when they don't have school, they might only get one meal at one of those rec centers.
Well, Katie sent us a quick email asking if more restaurants than Bob Evans are participating. Yes, indeed, there are. Let's go over, you know, if we can, just a quick rundown on who's participating. And, of course, Katie, we will post a link on our website at WOSU.org. /all sides if you want to go there and find a link about the food fight and what restaurants are participating. But Marilyn Tomasi from Mid-Ohio Food Bank, can you give us a little bit of a rundown?
Are you kidding? We have, as I said, we have over 60 restaurants participating, from Bob Evans and all their locations to very high-end restaurants like you know, Filio's and G. Michael's Bistro and, you know, Max and Irma's too, Phillips Cody Hot Dog. So you can get yummy. You can get a breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, drinks at any priced restaurant, you know, kind of low budget to very high end. So 60 restaurants. Go to MidOhioFoodBank.org to get that total list of restaurants.
And then also on FoodFightHunger.org, correctly?
Exactly.
Okay, we'll have both of those links at our website at WOSU.org. So 60 restaurants, not just locations, but 60 restaurants are participating. So that's how many total locations then, Marilyn?
170.
There's some place for something for everybody.
There is.
Is it just continuing to grow now? Has the need stabilized a little bit? We know 2-3 years ago, Lisa Hamler-Podolsky from Second Harvest was here and predicting what was going to happen. It's all happening. Has it leveled off at all as far as the demand?
It hasn't leveled off. We are recently, Mid-Ohio Food Bank opened up its own on-site pantry, really more as a learning lab so that we could understand how people who are hungry, how they shop, how they cook, how they fix and prepare meals. And we expected about 200 people to come into this learning lab pantry a month, and we're getting now over 1,000 a month at that pantry. So, you know, as the recession, you know, continues and as things get a little better, we won't see it for a while because it takes a bit to catch up to those people to get them stabilized and back on their feet once they do have a job.
And once, you know, the way things are changing, the jobs that are replacing their old jobs aren't necessarily the same kinds of jobs that provide the same kinds of benefits, the same kinds of wage levels.
That's right. So they might be going into a job where when they lost it, were making a certain level of salary and going back into a job with a much lower. And I think it's important too, Anne, that, you know, it's not a they and us, because again, as I said, the face of hunger is changing, and it is us. And it is people that we know and people who we come in contact with. So it's not just those people over there who are hungry, but it truly is us.
And the Mid-Ohio Food Bank and lots of pantries are really changing, have changed a lot in the last few years, really in just the last few years, about what kind of fresh food offerings there are. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I know there's a big garden over at the food bank.
Yes, we're really committed to trying to provide food that is healthy. In fact, 33%, about a third of our inventory now is fresh produce, fruits and vegetables. And when you add in the fresh meat and dairy and bread, over 50% of our inventory now is fresh food. We believe that Mid-Ohio Food Bank has a responsibility and a role in the health of the community. So to the extent that we can work with farmers and other food industries to get fresh food, then we need to try to do that and get that food distributed.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about the food fight. We've been talking about the food fight. It takes place tomorrow, Wednesday, June 20th, across the city. Participating restaurants will donate 5% of each check to Operation Feed. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to the links that we'll post at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Before you make that reservation, before you decide where you go, why don't you make a call and find out if they're participating in the food fight tomorrow. Thanks again, Marilyn Tomasi, for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Marilyn Tomasi, she's Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and Margaret Standing. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Margaret is Communications Director for Bob Evans Restaurants, one of those 60 restaurants participating tomorrow. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is 89.7 NPR News.